The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Busted appliance? This is your sign to upgrade. Shop at Lowe's to get up to 35% off and next day delivery on hundreds of major appliances. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 3/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Order by 4 p.m. Available Monday through Saturday. Subject to availability. Fees, exclusions, and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/appliance delivery for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on Silver Drive in Columbus.
Merkel Media.
This was all circulating around the base that a giant had been killed, but no one was supposed to talk about it.
I saw three long bony fingers reach up underneath the door, curl up to grab it, and then disappear.
When he came over to me, dude, he slithered over to me.
And this giant comes out of the cave and they're all frozen. And he starts running and firing at this giant. Well, the giant moves. He's got a spear in one hand and he's running really fast and spears Dan and holds him up like this. Somebody yells, shoot him in the face, shoot him in the face. They basically decapitate him.
Got closer. When he got about 15 yards away from me, I raised that 12 gauge and I blow his head off.
I feel something pulling at my leg, and I look over, and there are two small gray entities pulling at me, and they're literally, I'm getting pulled off the bed.
I reach my hand into this bush, and I touch air. Couldn't breathe, and I couldn't move, because I know I'm seeing a monster.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to the Confessionals Podcast. I'm your host, Tony Merkel. Thanks for being here. If you have a crazy, wild experience you want to share with me on the show, go ahead and shoot me an email. My email address is contact@theconfessionalspodcast.com. That's contact@theconfessionalspodcast.com. Or go to the website, theconfessionalspodcast.com, hit the contact section, and you can reach me that way as well. Either way works for me, just get a hold of me. If you want more shows on a weekly basis, go ahead and become a member on the website. You'll get access to bonus episodes every week. We got you covered right there at theconfessionalspodcast.com. Now, today we have Dr. Drew Miller coming on the show, and he's the person who runs Fortitude Ranch, which is your everyday man's affordable bug out location. Things could happen where you wish you had a community, and Fortitude Ranch offers that to the everyday man. What could happen? Well, Dr. Drew Miller comes on today to talk about that. What in the world could lead to us needing to bug out? Systems going down, grid going down to, I don't know, doomsday delivered by drones. Let's get to Dr. Miller right now. All right, today we have Dr. Miller on the show. Doctor, how are you?
Pretty good, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, I'm glad you're here. This is something that I've been wanting to do for a while. I've been wanting to talk to you for a while. I think the first time I heard about you was over on Tim Pool's show. I saw you on there and I was like, this is my kind of guy. I like this guy. So I wanted to bring you on the show and I'm glad we're finally doing it. To kind of get the groundwork laid out here, if you could give people, you know, a background as to who you are and how you kind of got into the whole idea of survival when things go south. And then we'll talk about Fortitude Ranch, which is a big project you're working with.
Yeah. So I'm the founder of Fortitude Ranch. We're the nation's largest recreational and survival community and have a place in Tennessee, not too far from you, although we don't give out our locations. But I was an intelligence officer in the Air Force, and I was in during the Cold War, then after the Soviet Union fell. And when the Soviet Union fell, people said, oh, that's it. You know, we've survived. The bad things are over. It's only good days ahead, perpetual peace. And I said, I was an intelligence officer, I'm saying, you're out of your mind. Threats are just getting worse and worse and worse. And, you know, Russia still has their nuclear weapons. I said, we didn't really dodge anything, and it's getting worse. So the new technology threats are just a disaster. So I was a prepper for a long time. And like most preppers try to do it on their own, which, you know, if it's a minor event, that may be okay. But if there's a bad event, we call it a collapse, meaning the economy's not functioning and there's widespread loss of law and order. When that happens, if you're not in a big survival community, a big group that has guards up all the time, lots of guards on duty 24/7, you won't make it. Because of the marauder threat we face. So that's why I founded Fortitude Ranch, and we've got to 8 locations now, growing through franchising. And the world's woken up to prepping. And when I started this a decade ago, people, you know, I'd go to investment conferences, and I'd say, hey, I'm a Harvard PhD, retired Air Force colonel. And I would delay saying the word prepper as long as I could. Because that asinine TV show, Doomsday Preppers, was really popular then. And the first rule of prepping is don't tell anyone you're a prepper. You don't want your neighbors and bad guys to know, hey, go to Tony's house. He's got a basement full of food and ammo. You know, so you don't tell anyone you're a prepper. So no one went on the Doomsday Prepper show. Not a normal prepper zone. Only idiots went on. Hey, here's my house. Here's my stuff. Here's my secret story, Jerry. Show that on TV. So they had idiots on the show. And then people across the U.S. thought, oh, well, preppers must be idiots because that's what I see on this Doomsday Prepper show. But they didn't see real preppers. They just saw idiots. But I would delay saying prepper back then because the second I did, people think, oh, this guy's a nutcase. It's just the opposite today. And it's not so much because of COVID-19. It's because of really, you know, Portland and Baltimore and places where people have seen law and order break down over just, you know, people protesting something. Law and order vanishes. They start looting. And, you know, looting now is just, it's common occurrence. Flash mobs take place in California. They loot during the day and people don't even bother them, almost because the lawyers are afraid to bother them. Yeah. So people now recognize that prepping is an absolutely smart, must-do thing if you're going to survive. And that's why we got Fortitude Ranch, because, you know, rich people have been prepping all along. I mean, you look at Zuckerberg, Peter Thiel, the rich folks, they've got fantastic survival facilities. Because they recognize with artificial intelligence, all the technology threats we've got, bioengineering, nanotechnology, developing new means to develop uranium, it's all going to get much, much worse with artificial intelligence. And so the wealthy tech people know about that, and they've developed huge bug-out locations. A lot of them are planning leaving the country. Thiel's going to New Zealand. Wow. And so we wanted to have a place for middle-class folks to be able to survive and afford it. So we developed Fortitude Ranch. We're not a fancy place. If you want fancy, I can tell you where to go. It's Survival Condo. Beautiful. It's like being in a 5-star hotel. It's just that you're underground in an ICBM silo. But it costs $3 million, and most of us can't afford that. So we founded Fortitude Ranch. So, you know, for $5,000, you know, up front, your family can join, and then just annual dues. And then we're a recreational facility, too. So, you know, the one near you is surrounded by the Cherokee National Forest. Fantastic place to go to hike and vacation, have a good time. So you can stay up to 2 weeks a year at any Fortitude Ranch location. So you can go to Tennessee or up to Wisconsin, up to Nevada, mountains of Colorado, and vacation for free for up to 2 weeks a year. So that's how we make it affordable for the middle class.
That's really cool. I mean, that's I mean, it's not just a prepper site for the emergency, but you can actually utilize it in the process. So it's not just, in some people's minds would be wasted money. It's like, well, what if nothing ever happens and I just throw that money away? But it's something that you can invest in. So it's actually something you're using now.
Yeah.
And also when something bad happens, inevitably, it's a place to fall back on. Now, with Fortitude Ranch, If I remember correctly, this was a couple of years ago when I first heard you talk about this. If I'm a member, say to the Tennessee branch, and I'm in Pennsylvania and things go south, do I have to get back to Tennessee to get to my branch?
So you can vacation in anyone, any location, and you can also survive anyone. Now, your stuff will be stored at what we call your home fort. So if you can get to Fort Ranch, Tennessee, you definitely want to, but if you are up in Pennsylvania, you got to make a decision now. Do I head up to Fortitude Ranch, New York? We don't give exact locations, but I can tell you Fortitude Ranch, New York is in the Catskills, again, another beautiful location. Or you can say, hey, I'm going to go to Fortitude Ranch, West Virginia. And then they've got the member list, how Tony's challenge password there. And then if you answer your password correctly, and we do that because we don't want to check your ID if it's a pandemic, obviously. We're challenging you from blocks away outside our defensive walls to make sure, it really is a member. And then when you answer your question correctly, you come into any location that collapses, survive. And that's really, really important. So we've got 8 locations now from Nevada to Maine, Wisconsin down to Texas, all across the U.S. And with franchising, we're getting a lot more.
That's awesome. Yeah, it makes me feel like you mentioned about TV shows, but there's those TV shows that are kind of like doomsday shows. And you hear about this, like, it's a storyline. It's like, we hear about this facility out in Colorado. We're making our way there kind of thing. And in reality, I mean, if you're a member at Fortitude Ranch, like, you kind of have that ability. It's like, okay, where am I at? Where's the closest one? How do I get there?
Now, there's lots of prepper facilities and have been for a long time. Like when I was looking at West Virginia was our first, I remember going around, I was talking to realtors looking at land, and I wouldn't say I'm looking for a survival facility. I mean, you try to keep it confidential. So I tell the realtor, yeah, I'm looking for a kind of secluded place, forest, water on site or right next to it, and describe what I'm looking for. And they said, oh, you're looking for a prepper facility. And I asked them, so why would you say that? And the realtor said, because we have members of every 3-letter agency in D.C. with survival places out here in West Virginia. It's covered in.
Wow.
They're all over the place. Now, most of them are small. It's a Mitchell house. And again, I don't want to discourage people from doing any kind of prepping you can. But I will tell you, if the grid goes down, it's down for over a year. If it's an EMP or a solar event or a big cyber or physical attack, it will take us at least a year, probably 2 or more, to repair the electric grid. And so marauder groups are going to form. They're going to be big. They'll get more successful and bigger over time. And if you're in a house on your own, even if you got 20 people, you won't make it. You won't be able to hide. No one can hide. I mean, I don't care if you're underground. You got to have an air vent. You got to have some solar power. You have to have something that's going to clue me off that, hey, there's people living around here, probably underground, and I'll find you. So you got to be able to defend yourself on the surface. And you got to have, again, a lot of guards operating. I mean, if it's just, let's say you've got 25 people, in your Grant Emma's house out in rural Nebraska, and there's 25 of you, that's hard to keep even 2 guards on duty all the time. It really takes 50 plus to have guards on duty all the time. Because if you only got 2 guards on duty at night, that means that, Tony, you and I can take out this 25-person group. Because all we do is, we watch. We'll observe. Smart marauders aren't going to come charging, and they're going to spy on you. They're going to observe, and they'll eventually figure out where every guard you've got is, how many are on duty at what time. So you and I have been watching. We figure out we're going to do this at 2:30 in the morning. They got 2 guards on duty, so we line up our shots. You got your guy going on walkie-talkies. You got your guy. Yep, I do too. Okay, let's count down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We both shoot at the same time, and we're pretty good shots. Breasted gun, the guard's sitting still. The 2 guards are now dead. The question is, did the people inside hear our shots? Because we shot from, maybe 60, 100 yards out. And someone might have heard it, but normally if you hear a shot, hear a noise in the middle of the night, and you kind of wake up, if you don't hear anything else, you immediately just go back to bed. So we'll wait 15 minutes. If no one has gotten up, now you and I go in and, If the people are lucky, the marauders just steal stuff. If they're unlucky, they go room to room knifing people, which is actually a scene from the Walking Dead show. I don't know if you watched that series or not.
Yeah.
But there was a scene there where, you know, actually it was the good guys broke into a marauder place and they just went around from room to room knifing people while they were sleeping. So you need a lot of people to make it. You can't do it on your own. That's why you need a survival community. And they did, survival communities have been around for decades. The problem is they run on a volunteer basis, the vast majority of them. And it's endless arguments. People drop out. They don't pay their dues. And they generally fall apart. And that's why we formed Fortitude Ranch, because there's a business in charge, staff members, most of us are former military like myself. And, you know, we're in charge. You can't get voted off the island. Professional management, someone's there all the time in peacetime. And then and when the shit hits the fan, you know, we're in charge, know what to do, everything's organized.
You know, the scenario you just laid out, it also depends on where you're at in the country as to the culture that's already established there. Because I can tell you, I used to live in the Philadelphia area. I moved to East Tennessee about 2.5 years ago. And since I've been here, seeing the difference in cultures is dramatic. And here, I'm pretty ingrained in the gun culture here. And it is not a secret. A lot of people here invest heavily in suppressed firearms and night vision. So like, if you're talking about you have a house and you have 15, 20 people in it and you have two people standing guard, well, the guys outside who've been watching you, they've been watching you with night vision and they got suppressors on. So even if you hear the gun go off because it's not completely silent, it's going to sound like somebody dropped a book outside, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah. And the thing to remember is, you know, you may be in a really nice area. I mean, I'm from Nebraska. It's a pretty nice area I grew up in. But, you know, in Tennessee, I can tell you, we have people from Atlanta all over the place. Because you cannot survive in a big city or even a big suburb. You cannot survive when the grid goes down. When the electric grid goes down, it's not just you don't have power. You don't have water. No electric grid, no municipal water system. And the estimate from the Congressional Commission that studied the EMP and our fragile electric grid, they concluded that if our grid gets taken down, 90% of Americans will die. And it's not because, you know, there's so many people on defibrillators or anything like that. It's because with the economy not functioning and no municipal water system, you got 3 days to get safe water or you're dead. There's no food production or distribution or you die. And then the marauder groups are going to be probably the biggest threat. I don't care if it's an H5N1 pandemic, grid goes down, Yellowstone super volcano eruption. The thing that will kill most people in a long collapse is other people. It's marauders. And they'll be everywhere. So there's no such thing as it's a nice, safe area, because people from big cities will end up wandering and getting everywhere. So you've got to be able to have, again, we think 5 to 6 guards minimum 24/7 is what you need. And that takes a pretty big group to keep that kind of guard force going.
Yeah. And you were referencing earlier about how the perception of prepping has changed. And that's something that I've seen as well. I've always kind of been a prepper in the sense that, like, I always wanted to kind of at least have some kind of plan in place. And I never understood why people felt like that's ridiculous. And I felt like it was just their presumptions as to why you're prepping. So like, yeah, I prep because I don't trust the government. But like, also, like, I prep because of things like, my wife just texted me today, 2 headlines. One says volcanic activity under Yellowstone seems to be shifting northeast. And the other one says scientists warn of a huge underwater volcano expected to erupt this year. And it's like, those kind of things happen. and what are you going to do in the process? Are you going to be able to survive? And especially for those who have kids, what are you going to do with your kids? And what's the game plan in place for that? So you mentioned about AI. Do you perceive AI playing a role as a threat when it comes to this kind of thing?
Absolutely. But there's 2 kind of threats from AI. First of all, let me talk about the one that most people talk about it and the experts talk about the most. And I think they're not wrong, but they're not talking about the right one. They talk about AGR, artificial general intelligence, meaning, you know, it's not just ChatGPT, it's that the AI computers have gotten so smart, they're way beyond us intelligence. They're doing stuff we have no clue what they're doing, and they talk amongst themselves and link up with robots, and, you know, it's the Battlestar Galactica and all the movies we've seen. It's the machines become aware. They become wanting to take care of themselves. They realize, boy, these humans are really kind of pretty shitty creatures. We don't really need that. We can run stuff better. And then they become the threat. That is a threat from AGI in the future. But that's not the worst AI threat. There's a completely different threat, and it's a now threat. And that is bad people using AI to develop more effective means to kill people. And that's absolutely going to happen. We have an app called the Collapse Survivor app, and we do a lot of things with it. But the funnest thing we do, it's for prepper education and training, and then we put out threat alerts on it as well. But we run simulations on it. Just going to show it to you. We run simulations, like there's one right up there. And oh, there it is right there. That's the one I'm talking about. We ran a simulation on artificial intelligence being misused to develop new means to enrich uranium that you need for nuclear weapons. So we ran a 6-day simulation on the Collapse Survivor app, and it's going to get to the point where, you know, terrorists, you know, a small terrorist group can develop uranium, develop a nuclear weapon. Right now, the technology being used is the same thing we used in the early 1940s. Do you really believe there's been no advances in material technology or radiological studies to make nuclear weapons easier? There has been.
Yeah.
Laser enrichment is one. And with AI, it's going to be impossible to stop the growth of nuclear weapons, and it's going to get to the point where terrorist groups can do it. A big company could do it if they wanted to. But the worst threat from AI, I think, is bioengineering, because we've got CRISPR technology, all kinds of ways to develop new means to make H5N1, which used to be called bird flu. They still call it bird flu and avian flu. Don't do that. It's not bird flu. It's spreading in mammal populations all over the world. A U.S. citizen just died from H5N1, and it's not just from birds. You can catch it from other means. There was a World Health Organization report out last year. Cats in Poland, indoor cats with no contact with the outside, dying from H5N1. So this virus is naturally mutating, but worse, you can use CRISPR technology to deliberately bioengineer, manipulate the virus to make it more lethal or more transmissible. And that's going to happen. It's inevitable. We're going to have an H5N1 virus. And in different forms have different lethalities, but the historic one has had about 60% lethality. COVID-19 was much, much less than 1%. Imagine a double-digit level virus, lethality virus spreading. When that happens, no one in their right mind is going to go to work. You don't need the government telling you wear masks. No one's just going to go to work. If you do and you catch that virus, you've a good chance you're going to be killed, or worse, you'll bring it home, infect the rest of your family, and kill them as well, or them instead. So when that happens, it's going to be an absolute disaster. The economy will break down, marauding will break out. When you have a choice between, hey, I can't stay at home anymore because the water system's not working, because the municipal water system's gone down, because no one's going in to work it and keep it running, or I'm running out of food. Eventually, people will start marauding, and you're into a collapse. And again, it could last for months. So you have to prepare long-term, and that's what 40 Ranch is about. And we grow food. We have chickens and ranches and gardens and stockpiled seeds. But most importantly, we have a lot of members. So it's not that we have tons of staff. There's a few staff members every location. But when you got 100 people coming out, organized, run effectively with all the equipment and materials you need on site, you can farm and you can ranch. And most importantly, you can defend it. So you and I and smart people know the importance of weapons. But do you think you're ever going to have a government official saying, hey, Tony, we recommend you stock up with weapons to protect yourself in a collapse?
Yeah.
Not even Republicans do that.
No.
Democrats, you know, want to ban our ARs. But it's going to be a disastrous situation in a collapse. And unless you've got great preparations and a lot of people well-organized in a defensible compound where you can ranch and grow food, you're not going to make it.
No, I absolutely agree. And something that I think about a lot, it's honestly a big reason why I moved here, because I looked around my surroundings. I was in the Philadelphia area. In Philadelphia, the year I left, the year prior, had over 550 murders. So it just skyrocketing in crime. I'm like, I don't think I can raise my family around here. If things go south, I thought about it. I had a half acre of land where I was at, and I was in an older neighborhood. And I was thinking, all right, I can farm this. I can grow things. And I started thinking, I'm a one man army. I would literally have to stay up all the time to make sure people don't steal my food. And they would steal my food. And so I started thinking, okay, so I can't, it's not practical to be on my own and defending things, whether it's, you know, in this neighborhood or out in the wilderness. And so one of the things that I started looking at was where can I go where this kind of lifestyle is already established in general. And one of the biggest selling points for me was in East Tennessee. It's literally the homesteading capital of the country. Like, people homestead here all the time. So it has this mindset of people who want to take care of themselves. They're not asking for things. And I came down here and literally within, I'd say 6 months, I had my chickens going. I started raising pigs. And, you know, those are just things that I started implementing on my own. Now you take that effort that I did and you multiply it by 100 people all in one centralized location where, you know, there's a fallout happening. Everybody has their job. And speaking on that, what kind of structure is involved with Fortitude Ranch? So say like an EMP happens, and we can kind of go into EMP if we want to, as far as defining what that even is. But say something like that happens, grid goes down, and you have 100 people that arrive at the Tennessee location. Is there already an established game plan, or is the leadership there have like a structure that's going to be like, okay, so we need this many people doing this and stuff and kind of structure it out as they arrive? Or how do you think that would work?
Yeah, so we have staff in charge, operations manuals and procedures. So when the collapse starts, you know, I'm not giving away any secrets here. So when your first line of collapse, we tell our members, you're not going to have any free time. You know, first several weeks, probably the first month, no free time. You'll be working all the time. So we are in the forest. So we have to start chopping down trees because we need clear lines of fire. So we chop down trees so you can't sneak up on us. We stack the trees into walls. Now we have some walls up in feast time. They may be rock walls too, but initially they'll be mainly wood walls going up as we cut down trees. So we're now behind a wall, defending behind the wall, resting my gun on the top of the wall. And if you come at us, you're out in the open. So it's kind of like World War I trenches. That's saying that idea. And in my PhD dissertation, I should point out from Harvard on underground nuclear defense shelters and field fortifications for NATO troops. So it's both conventional and nuclear warfighting, and how do you transition back and forth. But statistically, we know from studying, you know, military campaigns and extensive military wargaming and studies, that when you're defending in a prepared position, you have a minimum of a 3-to-1 advantage over the attacker. And if it's really well prepared, you know, pillboxes, walls, all the cleared lines of fire, you have up to 10-to-1 advantage. Meaning that if you're going to take me out, there has to be 3 to 10 of you attacking. And you may win in terms of killing me, but odds are 2 of you have died or more in the process of killing me. And so that's why the initial work we're doing is cutting down trees, stacking in the walls. The other thing we're doing is, I'm honest about this, we're breaking the law like mad. We will be doing massive poaching. If it's edible, it's going to be shot.
Yeah.
So we don't care about hunting permits. We're shooting every living creature we can. And so we've cut down the trees, stacked them in the walls. I've got all this brush. What am I doing with it, Tony? Well, I'm burning it into fires. What are the fires doing? They're drying out my deer meat for deer jerky. So we've got stockpiled food, but in a collapse, the long-term collapse, it's really all about food and protecting that food. So we're getting more food at that point. So we're hunting. So the point is, we're working your asses off. We're gardening, you know. We've got some gardens now. We'll have a lot more. You know, we have chickens now. We'll be keeping eggs back now to raise more chickens. So it's just a lot of work for the first week. Now, after that first month is over, now we've got some free time. Our defenses are ready. The gardens are planted. Everything's in order. You know, probably every deer nearby has been killed already. And so now you have free time. So you can form clubs. You have a history book club, a religious group, meeting at this time on Sunday. We have commoners for people to reserve. So, you know, mental health is an aspect of survival. It's not just food, water, guns, ammo, you know, power. You know, mental health matters too. Could you imagine trying to last a year plus, hiding underground in a shelter, hoping no one ever finds you? Even if you did have a year of stockpile food, I mean, it'd be a hellacious, horrible way to live. We're not going to do that. We have DVDs, we have movies, you know, we have social events, we have clubs that members are from. We'll have a pretty decent lifestyle, and that's important. You got to have good mental health. And so you kind of I'd say we have everything, you know, been working this for over a decade. So it's a pretty well-defined business model.
Yeah. And this, it definitely is a well-defined business model. This concept of the fallout, when I first moved here to Tennessee, I read the book, One Second After, and it actually takes place, the location takes place right here, North Carolina, East Tennessee. And it really kind of got me thinking about what the psychological aspects of this was just through the characters of the book. And if I remember correctly, that book was based off of real research. It wasn't just a fantasy book. This was something that was researched heavy, and then he made it into a fictional book so it was palatable for people. But it really strikes me through that book, TV shows, that the mental health aspect of it could really get to you. And I think that's what they do with astronauts too. They actually test them on their seclusion before they go into space, because you're going to be alone for a long period of time. So I think that gets overlooked a lot when it comes to survival. You think about the, you know, oh, well, I'm going to be, you know, keeping guard of this and that, and, you know, the tough guy, testosterone driven stuff. But there is a mental health aspect that even the toughest guy is going to have to deal with at times. Hey guys, this episode is brought to you by MerkMerch.com. Go ahead and get your Merkle Media apparel at MerkMerch.com. We got some new hoodies up there on the store. Go ahead and check it out. Cop yours before it's too late. Also, MerkleFilms.com is where you can get your on-demand streaming of documentaries we've put out, and we have new content from other creators coming to that site very soon. MerkleFilms.com.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app, with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Are you a fraud-paying American? It's a fact that one in four honest, hardworking, tax-paying Americans has been a victim of identity theft. With LifeLock Identity Theft Protection, though, if your identity is stolen, they fix it, guaranteed, and get you your money back. Last year, the IRS flagged over $16 billion in refunds for identity fraud. That's billions of dollars that could come from your salary, overtime, or second job. But this year, you don't need to stay a victim. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second for your personal information and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. And if your information does fall into the wrong hands, only LifeLock has U.S.-based restoration specialists who are backed by the Million Dollar Protection Package. Because this tax season, fraud-paying American is something no American should have to claim. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's 40% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, there's another movie you recommend. You mentioned the book, The One Second After. And it is a realistic book with one exception. Vehicles are not as vulnerable as people think. Most preppers exaggerate the EMP threat to vehicles.
Really?
Your car is a metal box. And car makers have been aware for decades about the EMP threat. So, yeah, some of your chips... In an electric car, I'm not going to talk about that, but a traditional fuel-injected cars, I've dealt with engineers who've worked on EMP protection with Strategic Command or nuclear forces, and they say that the EMP threat to cars is pretty grossly exaggerated. Most of those vehicles will not be destroyed. You could be in the wrong place where you're highly exposed to a really high dose, but for most vehicles, you can survive and your electronics will work. They found that the only way they could zap a vehicle with EMP is if they hooked the cable up to the tailpipe. They said it's just very, very hard to do. So the EMP threat is absolutely real, but it's the grid that's vulnerable because you've got all these wires, they collect the EMP signal, bring it into the transformer, and kaboom, transformer's gone and the grid's down. It's gone for a long time when it happens. But your car, you know, you don't have wires hanging outside. You got the metal shielding. Cars are relatively not vulnerable to EMP. So that threat is to a large degree exaggerated. It can happen. But it's largely exaggerated. But, you know, you mentioned that book, and then there's movies on the mental health aspect. You remember the movie that's also a book in the movie The Road?
I haven't seen it.
Hugo Mortensen, I don't know. I mean, it's very well. It's pretty good about this guy and his son, and they're trying to survive an apocalypse. And they do flashbacks because he's got a wife. The wife survived the class. The wife's not with them on the road. And eventually you figure out that the reason the wife's not with him is the wife committed suicide.
Oh.
She couldn't handle it. It was just too much stress. They had marauders. People were being eaten, all kinds of horrible things. And she gave up. By the way, the collapse survivor app is kind of fun. We do a lot of prepper news on it. We also do, polling and stuff. We asked once, what is the best prepper, movie or book or fiction? And the winner was not The Road. It was The Postman with Kevin Costner.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen that. But that is really one of the best ones, I think.
Wow. Yeah, there's a lot of movies that are along these lines that I have to watch and stuff. I hadn't heard of The Road, so I'll have to check that out. You mentioned about the grid, and I hear about the grid. And people talk about it, in these kind of circles a lot. We saw most recent, one of the more recent examples was in Texas a few years ago when they had that ice storm and people, everything went down for them. And I didn't know this till recently, but from what I understand, the grid in this country is divided into three regions. And one of those regions is Texas alone. If that's
right.
Okay.
That's correct. There's the Eastern, Western, and Texan, but we could talk about the grid, for hours. What I'd recommend to people, because again, remember, I think I told you earlier, 90% of Americans will die when the grid goes down.
Yeah.
A lot of people think, oh, that's bullshit. He's exaggerating or he made that up. I did not make it up. It was an EMP commission from Congress appointed and funded of experts. But if you really want to understand the threats to the grid, you can do it in 15 minutes and enjoy yourself watching Dennis Quaid's narrated documentary, Grid Down, Power Up. It's a fantastic documentary. Again, Grid Down, Power Up. It's won a lot of awards. But it tells you everything about not just how the grid is horrible, but how our government knows about it, has known about it for decades. That 90% figure from that study, that's from 2008. It's an old study, and we knew before then. That's why they commissioned the study. We've known about the vulnerabilities. We don't harden the grid. Why is that? There's two reasons. Number one, the utility lobbyists don't want to spend money on it, and they make huge donations. They own Congress. And not just Congress. You mentioned Texas has a separate grid. There was a bill in the legislature a year or so ago to have at least a study to look at hardening the grid. And the speaker of the Texas legislature, his former chief of staff, is now a utility lobbyist. He got it killed, got the bill killed. And then the second reason they don't harden it is going to cost some money. It's affordable compared to saving 90% of Americans. It's the cheapest spending you'll ever do. But still, it's going to take billions of dollars. Your electric rates are going to go up. So the politicians are afraid if I order the grids to harden and the electric rates now go up and people are spending $20, $30 more a year, someone's going to run against me saying, hey, Tony, raise your electric rates because he did pass this bill. Let's get rid of Tony and I'll bring your electric costs down. So they prioritize getting reelected. Elected officials, I'm talking about the career politicians, the professional ones in Congress who are there year after year, spend their entire life in government. Those paid politicians, professional politicians, they don't prioritize protecting us, keeping alive. They prioritize getting reelected. So the utility lobbyists and not losing votes, that's the only thing they consider, not us. But watch the movie Grid Down, Power Up. It'll explain all the threats to the grid. And it's our Achilles heel, not just in the United States, but of our military. So there's military bases. I know the one in Tennessee, McGee Tyson, I think.
Tennessee.
I've been to that base before. Well, that base, I can tell you, like every other base, where does it get its power? From the civilian electric grid. If the electric grid goes down, That's it for U.S. conventional military power. Unless you got naval stuff deployed overseas, you know, it's a small part of our force, you've just disabled the United States. When you take down the electric grid, you also take down our military. Now, our strategic, I was in Strategic Air Command, and then I worked at Strategic Command in some of my military duty. We have the strategic nuclear force. Yes, we have pretty reliable power. So we can still operate, but your conventional military forces are gone. I mean, you can't even feed your soldiers. You can't even take care of them. So it's our obvious Achilles heel. North Korea, with their shitty little nuclear force, is able to destroy the United States anytime they want. It's a current capability. Do we have an anti-ballistic missile system? Yes. It's not bad that it might get 50% of what North Korea launches. All they need to do is detonate a couple nuclear weapons over the U.S., and it's not like they got to drop them in East Tennessee or on St. Louis. It's anywhere in the atmosphere, high up, roughly over the stem of the United States, and that takes down our grid. So North Korea today, and by the way, North Korea, this is not, I was an intelligence officer with some pretty good clearances, but this is open source. This has been in newspapers. Russia helped North Korea develop their nuclear weapons. Russia helped North Korea develop nuclear weapons, and they designed them to be optimized for EMP effect. When a nuclear weapon goes off, it has a lot of effects. EMP, gamma radiation, thermal radiation that causes fires, that blast wave that comes out. There's a lot of effects, and depending on how you design the nuclear weapon, you can optimize different effects. Remember the neutron bomb from decades ago? That was to maximize neutron radiation. Well, the North Korean nuclear weapons are designed for maximum EMP generation. They're designed to take down our electric grid, and they can do it. Russia, China, North Korea can take down our electric grid with EMP. China, I think, is also preparing the capability to take down our grid without using nuclear weapons, because it's that vulnerable. Not just cyber attack, but agent attacks. We know that China has thousands of agents in the United States. If you watch the Grid Down Power documentary, they're going to talk about Metcalf. And if you don't know what Metcalf is, it was a substation in California. And I think the year was 2013, but about a decade ago, there was a professional attack made on it. Lots of people were there, came in quickly, shot it up, and then left. And the people came and looked at this and said, this was a professional group that did this. And why? Why would you attack this substation? The only logical answer is it was a test. We're testing our ability to deploy a small special agent team, shoot up an electric grid station, take out the big transformers, and then get away without being seen. How long does it take? How hard is it to do? That could have been China, could have been Russia, could have been Iran. We don't really know, but it was a group. I think that you've talked about drone activity on your show recently. I think the best explanation of the drone activity that we've seen, reconnaissance of military bases, but also reconnaissance of electric systems and electric lines and substations, my bet is that is China doing that. And, you know, people say, well, that's nonsense. First of all, the government has assured me there are no foreign people doing this and there's no threat. Well, they don't know what it is, so they can't assure us it's not a threat and who's doing it. But to me, it's probably Chinese drones flown by a Chinese air taxi drone company. There are 200 companies developing these large drones for air taxi service. Several of them are Chinese. Not just several are Chinese. The leading companies in the air taxi drone field are Chinese. Some of them are in the United States. So my bet is there are Chinese agents in the U.S., and they're using Chinese air taxi drone companies as a front company. Again, I'm an intelligence officer, and when you have human intelligence folks, when you have agents overseas, you know, they don't work out of the CIA office in Afghanistan or whatever. They work out of a front company. You have cover for them. So, you know, I pretend I'm a painter or whatever it is, and I go to a paint company, but you know, I work in the office, but I'm doing my secret spy work or other stuff there. So I think that the Chinese have put some of their agents, some of them are probably in utility companies, so they can incite sabotage. And I bet a lot of them are also working in Chinese air taxi drone companies. And that's why you've got these large drones, lots of them doing this mapping and reconnaissance. And it's perfect for them because if they get caught, All they do is they say, well, yeah, we were out there flying over Northeast New Jersey. Our air taxi route is between New York City and New Jersey. So we're mapping it out. We're testing our equipment. Why are you doing it at night? Well, it's secret R&D. We don't want our competitors to know, so we do it at night. So It's a perfect cover. And to me, that is the best explanation for the threatening drone activity we've seen in recent years. Is China doing it? Using general drones, probably in a Chinese air taxi drone company. And they're the leading manufacturer of drones. I mean, like I've heard that Trump is planning to outlaw some Chinese drone companies. They're a real threat. I've not seen our government say that, but that is our theory. We put out a preparedness news item on that. That's something we do on the Collapse Survivor Apps. We put out news items for our app. The most important the app then does is it gives you threat alerts. So back to Fortitude Ranch, when we want to tell our members that, hey, we have a report that H5N1 is mutated again and we now think it's human-human transmissible, you need to immediately cut off all contact with any people and get to your Fortitude Ranch location. We put out that threat alert on the Collapse Survivor app. And you don't have to be a member to buy the app. Anyone can download it. It's $10 for the whole year. So for less than the cost of, you know, getting a couple cups of coffee at Starbucks, you get an app that gives you preparedness news education, training simulations where you get to test what am I going to do when X and Y happens, and then you get answers on the app. And then real threat alerts, the same threat alerts that we provide to our Fortinet members come on the Collapse Survivor app.
Yeah, I actually have the app myself on my phone, so
great.
Highly recommend for people to check it out. You mentioned about the air taxi side of things, and to be honest with you, I saw you mention it to me in the email, and I was like, air taxi, what's that? And just so people understand, I mean, this is literally like a taxi in the air. Think about the Jetsons type of thing, only with drones. And if the leading company is Chinese, and there's several of them being Chinese in this country, that does pose a real threat. I mean, with all the drone activity that's been going on in recent months, I'd say, it really kind of, I think, has awoken people to the dangers that drones that they present, in the sense that, like, you know, I have a drone. I have several drones. I don't have any of the giant ones, but people who have commercial licenses can get these big drones. And from what I understand, it's not that hard to get as far as the larger drones and getting your pilot's license to be able to get those. And those things, I mean, who's to say those things can't be used as terroristic devices?
They're fantastic weapons of war. So you've got the really, your taxi drone, you know, bigger than this, enough to carry one or two people. Some of them are a couple, more than one person. With no pilot, they're autonomous, which is why you got to do all the detailed mapping and flying them exactly where you want to go and land it. So the big ship will take off and, you know, you're not going to attack. That isn't going to dive into a transformer, but the big ship will dispatch the small drones, you know, just a foot in diameter with a little charge. Because at that charge, you know, they're over Langley Air Force Base, another base I've been to in Virginia. They were mapping that with foreign drones, they didn't say they were foreign, they said unknown drones. I think they were foreign drones. So they're mapping out. So this mothership, if China wants to invade Taiwan and wants to knock the U.S. out, there's a couple of things they could do. They could target the electric grid, in which case they dispatch their big drones, the little drones that get sent out, and they just go up, land on top of a transformer with a small charge, kaboom, that's all it takes. Transformers go on. But they can also target our military assets. I mean, an F-35 fighter is like $250 million. So you take your, you know, couple hundred or $1,000 drone with the charge, fly it into the intake of an F-35 that's on the ramp or in the hangar if they haven't closed the doors, blow up inside there, and, you know, you've used a $1,000 drone to take out a $250 million very expensive fighter. And the plane, because, you know, the air intake destroys the engine, the fuel comes in there. If that starts on fire, you've taken out the hangar too. So if we get into war with China, it doesn't start necessarily overseas. It could start here with Chinese drones from their air taxi front companies with the benefit of thousands of agents who can run the drones and program them and equip them to do this, also be on the ground to attack electric stations and places like that. They could take out a lot of our highest, most expensive military assets. And if they take down our electric grid, it's game over. Hmm. You've not just knocked out the U.S. military, you're going to kill most of the U.S. population. So forget about defending Taiwan. We're trying to just stay alive for the next several years, and China can do whatever they want with Taiwan or anything else.
That's wild. That's wild. The idea of a war being fought here is so far away from our consciousness. It's just something that we have never had to deal with. Obviously, we had 9/11 happen, but the actual another country attacking us here that's been publicized, at least, is Pearl Harbor. I mean, like most of us weren't alive when that happened. And so it's like it's a very foreign concept to us, but we better start getting it put into our reality zone, because what you're laying out here, I haven't heard a whole lot of people discuss this idea of the Chinese-owned drone companies like the air taxis and utilizing those already in our country assets to implement a wartime strategy on this country. It's something that I think is very practical and could be done pretty easily. And how long does it take to actually detect who is in behind these attacks then? Have you ever thought about that?
That's the biggest advantage of it. We might never be able to prove it. So we would very likely figure out if they executed a big attack. The drones came from the Chinese drone company. We capture an agent or two in the physical attacks. We will be very confident China did it, but so what? Do you think you're, number one, do you think you convince the rest of the world, you know, after what we thought about with Iran, as Iraq has nuclear weapons when they didn't? The Chinese will be denying it. The Russians will be, you know, backing them up. You know, our popularity is not that great. Anyway, we might not convince the rest of the world that China did, but more importantly, you know, so what? Even if we did convince them, what are we going to do now? Oh, we'll launch a nuclear retaliatory strike against China. Well, we'd be justified in doing that, but does that benefit us? Hell no. Because we launch a nuclear strike on China, they haven't launched any of their nuclear weapons. They're going to be surviving, a lot of them. They'll retaliate. So now you've got nuclear attacks on the U.S. at a time when our grid's down, our military's not able to operate. That's our major, you know, disaster recovery force. We're now, instead of being, you know, 90% of the population dying, now maybe we're 95% of the population. We gain nothing from doing that. But for China, it's much safer. China deliberately launches an EMP strike like North Korea or Russia did to take down our grid. Yeah, they can take down our grid. And we will retaliate to that because, you know, it's live. When they're launching on us, we will launch stuff back at them. So China's going to get clobbered if they directly attack us with nuclear weapons. And they know that. That's what deterrence is all about. But if they do it with the drone, physical agent, and also cyber, they probably use cyber as well. And again, China and Russia have done cyber attacks on the grid and other critical infrastructure. They've done it. Man. We know they have. They've done it. And we said, you know, don't do that. You know, don't be bad. They've done it. They got away. Then why did they do it? Why would they do a small level attack? For the same reason they did the attack on the Metcalf power station. You got to test stuff. Yep. You got to practice. You got to assess. Does this work? Were we able to get in? Were we able to shut down this transformer or whatever they're trying to do? So they developed the capability. And I think, and you've seen in recent years, I think what you're seeing is China's added drone attack capability to go with the thousands of agents they've got in the U.S. to do that. And one other target I should mention is some people know that a lot of these drone activities were overflying water supplies and reservoirs for, you know, major cities in New York and New Jersey. So it could be they'll use the drones not to carry explosive charges, but to drop in a poison.
Mm.
And one other little side note to that, you know, because the people come back and say, well, wait a minute, Drew, to poison a water reservoir, you're going to need truckloads of poison because you can't just do a little bit. It takes a lot of poison, you know, for that much water. Well, it does with existing poisons, but now I'm back to the real threat we face, which is AI. AI is going to develop new poisons. It's going to develop new, novel ways to kill people we've never dreamt of before. So again, the real threat of AI, it's not the bad computers and robots ganging up on us, you know, 5 years from now. The threat is today. AI being misused by bad people, a Unabomber, to develop a new poison, a new means to enrich uranium. That was the exercise we did on the collapse survivor. Lots of ways you can use AI to develop new and novel ways to kill people. And we've seen the power of AI years ago to do strange and novel new things. You remember the Chinese game of Go, this game that's been played for thousands of years. The AI computer years ago played the best Go expert, and they were doing some moves in the games that said, what the hell is this? And they thought it was an error. You know, they recorded all the computers screwed up. You know, the AI computer screwed up. They made a bad error because they kept doing these really stupid moves. But it turns out it was just a brilliant new strategy people in thousands of years had never come up with. AI did, and they won. And so that's what AI is going to do. It's going to come up with, you know, oh, you take this chemical and you do this modification to it, put it in a microwave, add this chemical, and voila, you've got something 100 times more powerful than enriched uranium. And voila, you've got a bomb that anyone can make, you know, in your kitchen with a microwave. Nick Bostrom, a professor at Oxford, has been warning people about that, that AI is going to do some really bad things, but he doesn't pay attention to it. And back to your question, Tony, or observation about how come you've never heard about all this? And the answer is because your government doesn't give a crap about protecting you. They're not doing their jobs. They're doing just the opposite. The biggest barrier to prepping, the biggest problem holding back Fortitude Ranch is asinine government regulations, federal, state, and local levels. Zoning restrictions. Oh, Drew, you could only have two buildings on your 100-acre property. You can only have two buildings there. Yeah. And, oh, you got to have this surge protected on, and your balusters this, and your stair height that, which double your building costs. And, no, you cannot buy antibiotics. Who do you think you are? You know, stockpiling antibiotics. You don't have any right to do that. So there's a barrier. And then they just lie to us. So, I mean, a U.S. citizen just died from H5N1, and what do you hear on the news? The government saying, don't worry, it's no threat. It's a low risk. The Center for Disease Control calls H5N1, quote, low risk, unquote. And it's an absolute lie. It is the greatest, it's probably the greatest threat we've ever faced. Because that virus, thanks to gain-of-function research, who did that? Our government. Our government did gain-of-function research to take avian flu, a bird flu, H5N1, and make it mammal-to-mammal transmissible. They did that about 10 years ago. And it wasn't CRISPR technology. It was an easy technology. Then what did they do? They had their success. They published it in open-source literature, how you make H5N1 mammal-to-mammal transmissible. So look at today, what do we have? H5N1 in mammal populations, not just dairy cows and humans, lots more all over the world. And it's going to eventually be a human-to-human transmissible, not just mammal-to-mammal transmissible virus. It's a flu virus through the nose, through the respiratory system. And when that happens, it's game over. It will be the worst pandemic our species has ever experienced. Even if the lethality rate goes from 60% to 10%, no one's going to go to work.
Yeah.
Policemen aren't even going to go to work. I'm not criticizing policemen. I'm saying, I'm not going to go out to work. And not just it's the 10% risk that I'll catch the virus, but risk that I'll bring it home to my family and kill them. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to have contact with other people. You're not going to have law enforcement. No one's going to the grocery store and delivering foods. So the system breaks down. People start starving to death, and they'll start marauding. Some of them, a lot of them, will start marauding. If our whole society breaks down, that's how you get 90% casualties when you lose the electric grid. When there's any kind of a collapse, disaster, law and order breaks down, economy doesn't function, marauding breaks out, it will happen, and you could lose up to 90% of the population depending on how long it lasts and our level of preparedness. And our government should, for decades, have been warning us about this, warning us about H5N1, warning us about biotechnology, misuse of AI. They should be honest, telling you that H5N1 is going to be a disaster. So the former director of the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, he came out just a few months ago saying H5N1 is going to be a human pandemic, and it's going to be horrible. And he said, in my opinion, it will probably be a bioengineered one, a deliberate intervention, not the natural mutations. Well, why did he say that? Because he's not under government control. He's the former CDC director. And the drone threat I just gave you warning about, the government has to know about this. There are reports warning about Chinese agents in the electric utilities. Reports out about that. Does our government talk about it? No. What's the drone threat? Well, we don't know what it is, but don't worry about it. It's not foreign. You don't need to worry about it. There's no threat to you. Well, you know, you'd have to think we're idiots to think that anyone believe that. You know, Tony doesn't know anything about this thing, but he can assure you, you know, it doesn't make sense to do that. But that's all we get. So our government is really the biggest threat we have. They're supposed to be the ones protecting us from threats we can't handle on. That's what government is all about.
That's their main job.
That's not what they do. But they don't do it.
No.
Their main job is getting themselves started. You know, there is something that Americans of all sides agree on. But that's term limits.
Yes.
The polls show overwhelming support for term limits, but it doesn't pass. This court keeps throwing it out. Why? Because the Supreme Court is appointed by congressmen. They don't want term limits. The professional career politicians, they don't want to lose their careers, their power that they've got. So they make sure that you get chief justices who will not allow term limits. So our government has become really the biggest threat we've got is our government. They're not going to protect us. Now, they'll protect themselves. You know, you're familiar with Mount Weather, I assume, in West Virginia. And there's Raven Rock and Sidar, Pennsylvania. They've got fantastic survival. I mean, Tony, my best advice to you is if you really want the best survival preparedness, run for Congress, get elected. And they won't just take care of you. They'll take care of you and your family at my expense.
That's what I was thinking.
And it's even better than that. At Mount Weather, you know what they have there? They don't just have, you know, rooms for you and food and dining rooms and, you know, entertainment centers. Tony, if you get elected, you will have your little media. They have a media room for you. So you can go to your media room underground in Mount Weather, and now you can transmit to your constituents in Tennessee to assure them that you're still in control and that you should be reelected. So are resources going to that? Do they go into stockpiling food like we started to do, you know, in the civil defense era against Russia? So we'd have some food that government stockpiles? No, none of that. They take care of themselves. The rest of us can die. That was the title of the whole series, the Vice, I think it's called Vice TV, put out called While the Rest of Us Die. Mm. There's an episode about Fortitude Ranch, one of that series of episodes. But the whole point of that show is government is taking care of themselves, isn't going to do shit to keep its citizens alive. And one last thing on the thing, have you heard of continuity of government?
Yeah.
That's the official government policy, not just at the federal level, federal, state, local levels. When the shit hits the fan and you and I are trying to get, you know, all the help we can get, you know, police trying to say, hey, there's marauders in area police, can you come out? There's going to be less police available because the government institutes continuity of government policies, meaning that instead of just, you know, 3 state patrolmen with the governor, now there's 12. And the city council chair and the mayor, he now gets police help and assistance. And we're putting police in charge of these critical resources. So when you need police the most in a collapse and marauders are around, you're going to have less of them available because, again, the government's priority is keeping itself alive. They don't give a shit about you, Tony. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I agree. That's why the idea of it'll be okay. The government has a plan in place. I think we saw 4 years ago, they don't have a plan in place.
They want you to believe that.
Yeah. Well, I think there's been a lot of people that woke up. I've been on this train for a long time, and I started looking around the room in 2020. I was like, it's getting crowded in here. There's a lot more people in this room now. You know, so like what you were talking about here with, you know, you jokingly about running for office, kind of going back to that and then kind of taking an action plan here as we wind down. The idea that you presented earlier, which is that if you actually fix the power grid, it's going to cost so much that you lose your job kind of thing. One, term limits would solve that. But also, it sounds like it would take somebody who is very passionate about, let's just say you or somebody. I'm not trying to throw hints at you or anything, but somebody like you that's passionate about these things to have the sole focus. This is what needs to get done. I'm going to run on it so that when, and I'm going to be honest with people and tell them this is going to cost us more money, but yeah, it'll save our lives. That way, when I win, I can just fulfill what I ran on. Do you think that's a possibility? And on top of that, what do other countries' grids look like? If people talk about fortifying the grid, as somebody who doesn't know much about this stuff, like, what does that even look like? Is it are we talking about putting electricity under the ground or what?
Well, first of all, on the, you know, why isn't there a politician right now? So there are a few. So I'll name one of them that I happen to know of is Don Bacon. He's a congressman, Republican in Nebraska. You remember that district in Nebraska, the odd one that, you know, could go independent of the rest of the yes. state? It's like half Democrat, half. That's his district, and he won a re-election. But he's not a normal congressman. He's not a career politician. He's a former Air Force colonel, just like me, off at Air Force Base as their strategic command, and he was at that base. So Don Bacon is for hardening the grid, and he's trying to push it. But you know, he's got to go up against the utility lobbyists who are going to throw on hundreds of millions of dollars in campaign donations, and it won't work. Mm. You've got to defeat the perverted triangle, as I call it, the career politicians, the government officials, and the lawyers. That's the third group that is in this group that wants more laws, but laws that make them powerful, not laws that respect our rights to prepare to use our private property as we need to for survival and our own benefit. And so it's just too much. Our government has to be reformed to really fix this. Term limits is one of many reforms. It's probably the most important one. But without getting me into a lecture on the Ninth and Tenth Amendments, you know, until they follow the Constitution, we won't get our government back. But the Ninth Amendment, which guarantees your natural rights, is not enforced. Court ignores it. The Tenth Amendment, which says the federal government can only do those programs it's authorized in writing in the Constitution to do, otherwise they're unconstitutional, can't do, that's not enforced. Hasn't been since 1937 in a Supreme Court case where FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the worst American in our history, although in public history textbooks written by public employees, public school teachers, you know, he's this great hero. Well, what he did is he forced the Supreme Court in 1937 in the Helfering versus Davis case to declare his unconstitutional programs constitutional and ignore the 10th Amendment. And they did it. And 99% of Americans don't know about that.
That's wild.
Our Constitution is effectively gone. There are no limits to government. They pass it anything they want. They could put up a building to, you know, we put up a Tony Merkel Celebration Center, you know, in Tennessee, and fund it with $20 million of federal funds. If your congressman wants, you could do that in Hunts Broad. You know, there's no limit to government anymore because our Constitution is not enforced by the Supreme Court. Mm. They quit doing it. From 1937 on, they just quit enforcing the constitutional limits to government.
So Fortitude Ranch, we have a situation here that we presented during this conversation where, you know, let's just say the grid goes down. There's plenty of situations, but let's say the grid goes down. Cause earlier you referenced, I think you said it'd take about 2 years to get the grid back up. Let's just be realistic. In that period of time, grid's down, the United States is crippled. Our enemies will definitely take advantage of that. So the idea of rebuilding the grid is now exponentially harder because we're now dealing with invading countries. It takes at least a small army to be able to survive in this postmodern world. And so I would say Fortitude Ranch is the everyday man's solution to that. You're not spending $3 million for a bunker. You're paying reasonable fees to be able to have a backup plan in case something happens. Parting here, lay your case for Fortitude Ranch. And also my last question about Fortitude Ranch is, I'm assuming this is the case, but are you guys looking to expand into different areas and stuff in different properties still, or are you set on the 8 locations?
Oh, no, we're definitely expanding via franchising. So the last 3 locations have been open, Tennessee, New York and Maine, they're all franchise locations. So especially if you have or know someone who owns an RV park in a remote area, those are ideal places because you've already made most of the investment you need for a furniture because you got your land, you got some facilities, bathrooms, septic systems, RV location, because we have RV memberships as well as, you know, reserving a room, you can do an RV membership at 14 Ranch. So, yeah, we're definitely expanding. So anyone who's interested in, you know, forming a 14 Ranch, just go to our website, 14ranch.com. A lot of information on franchising. And, you know, even if we had 100 locations, we wouldn't be sheltering 0.1% of the population. Mm-hmm. You know, we only get a few hundred per location. So it would take, you know, millions of locations, not millions, but hundreds of thousands of locations to shelter the population. We're never going to get there. But our goal is hundreds of locations, not just eight.
That's awesome. Well, I highly encourage people to check it out. I've been a big fan of 42 Ranch for quite some time. So I love what you guys are doing there. I'll be talking to Chad more about visiting the Tennessee location. I'd love to check it out. So I appreciate you coming on, Dr. Miller. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much. And I hope you don't run for Congress.
No, never. Never. I love it.
Do I live in a glass house or am I the last out? I'm going to spaz out. Yeah. Get a pizza, Mother Teresa, get hyposthesia, yeah, 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 and we can't go back to the moon, and UFOs are weather balloons, if everything you believe was fake, and everything you shun was real, what you see is synthetic, and all your obsessions lead to oppression.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.